I'm going to follow that up. That was pretty phenomenal. Oh, man. What a great morning. Amen?
Amen.
Well, it is a great morning, not only to be together, but to be a child of God, to be a part of the Forest Mill congregation. Welcome to Forest Mill. If you are visiting with us, we want you to know how glad we are and how welcomed your presence here. If you're just a regular old member, well, we're glad you're here too. It's good to be back, and it's good to be with you all. David did an excellent job last week, and I hear that Jonathan did a great job the week before that. Not my son, Jonathan. I'm going to have to start distinguishing Jonathans when I look over this way and just say Jonathan. Jonathan Tucker did a great job the week before that. So I am very thankful to have just these guys who are willing and able and capable of stepping in and doing such a great job in my absence. I want to thank the elders again for the opportunity to take my family on this big vacation. We committed to taking this vacation last fall, long before we had any designs on coming to Forest Mill or being a part of this congregation. And so it was already set in place. And when the elders hired us, we said, well, here's kind of a caveat. You're going to hire us, and then we're leaving for a while. And they were graciously willing to work with that. So I'm very, very thankful of that. And thank you to all of you for your encouraging messages via Facebook and text messages while we were traveling. We tried to publish snippets from each day to our family and friends so they could kind of keep up with our whereabouts in case we went missing in Navajo territory or something, which is entirely possible, I have learned. Your GPS does not work nearly as many places as you think your GPS works. That's what I've learned. But for those of you who are not on Facebook, or for those of you who have not completed the lengthy application process to be one of our exclusive friends on Facebook, I wanted to give you the trip in something of a nutshell. So here we go. This was what we did. We flew for, oh, look at this. We flew from Nashville. Oh, man, I live. Can't do both things at once. Yeah, we flew from Nashville to Denver. We drove from Denver southwest down towards Four Corners. And then we drove down here and then up here over to Las Vegas, back up through here. We had enough money to get home. That was the trip in a nutshell. On the way, this is just to kind of catch you up. On the way, we toured through Denver's Museum of Natural History. We rode horses through the Garden of the Gods. We hopped a train that went up Pikes Peak. We rafted the Arkansas River. We soaked in the hot springs, the Pagosa Springs. We saw the ancient cliff dwellings of the Anasazi at Mesa Verde. We slept in a Navajo hogan. That's the actual hogan we slept in. We drove through Monument Valley. We took a jeep tour of Canyon de Chelly. We went on to the Petrified Forest. We then floated down through Glen Canyon. We crawled through the Antelope Canyon. We walked along the Grand Canyon's north rim. We toured the Best Friends Animal Sanctuary in Kanab, Utah. We saw the Hoover Dam. We caught a Cirque du Soleil show in Las Vegas. We drove up to Nazion National Park. We rode in a hot air balloon in Salina, Utah. Well, at least I did. We hiked through Arches National Park, and we toured Vail, Colorado before flying back to Nashville. That's it. It was 11 days. And I sort of feel like a missionary when I was a kid, when I was running out of time. Oh, here we are. Needless to say, we had a great time, and we are so happy to be home. That's the way road trips are, isn't it? When you go on a road trip, there's excitement, and there's disappointment, there's beauty, and there's wonder. There is a lot of togetherness, and there is all of these unexpected adventures along the way. For those of you who didn't know, I didn't plan to take a hot air balloon ride. I showed up to take pictures of hot air balloons taking off, ended up working crew and getting it to go up in one of the hot air balloons. Just one of those kind of strange things that happens on the road. And in a sense, we're kind of on a similar type journey. We're all on something of a road trip. And it's a journey discipleship. That's what we're going to be studying here for the next couple of weeks anyway. Among us this morning, there are Christians who have been, you've been following Jesus for decades, several decades. Some of you have been following Jesus for just a few days or weeks or months. Some of you have not even made the commitment yet to kind of go on this road trip. But this morning, we're going to begin a really short series. I think it's going to be 2 weeks, unless I think of something better to add. I think we're going to do this week and next week, study what this journey of discipleship looks like. Some of the steps that you have taken, or some of the steps that you will take, or some of the steps that have even been taken on your behalf, what it looks like to follow Jesus. And we all have, whatever your journey, whatever shape your journey's taken, however long you've been doing it, however far you think you've come, all of our journeys have some kind of touch points in common. Like, you may point A to point B in a different way, but everybody gets to point A or point B at some point on their discipleship journey. So, my prayer to you this morning is not only that this will serve as a warning to sort of keep on the path, but that it will also be an encouragement as you look back over your journey so far and see how far you've come and see what you have through and see what has been done on your behalf. First things first, though, every journey begins with a plan. No journey of any length can be undertaken without some sort of planning involved, right? Now, I'm not normally a very good planner. If you know me very well, you realize I just told you this sermon series may be 2 or 3 weeks. So you know I'm not a great planner if I can't figure out that far in advance. If you're wanting one to work out a detailed plan of action, I am not your guy. It is not my thing. It is, for my wife, it's a natural gift. For me, it's a natural disaster to happen. It was with some reluctance that I sort of undertook the task of planning our family vacation. And it was kind of ended up being on me to plan it all out. I know what you're thinking. What was she thinking? But she was very gracious and willing to let me sort of do that. So over the course of the last few months, I sort of worked up. This is just a page out of our itinerary, and you can sort of see the plan. I mean, I'm as detailed as I can get. I sort of wrote down where we wanted to go, about how long it would take to get there. Confirmation numbers. There's costs. You can't see those because I covered those up. It's all sort of up there. It includes the names and addresses of our hotels we were staying at. It has airline confirmation numbers, driving times to reach our destinations, costs of each thing. I worked on this thing. For me, this is, again, this doesn't come that naturally, but I worked on this thing in order for us to get where we needed to go. I had to really get this. And every day it was like, well, what's on the itinerary today, right? Where do we need to go today? How long is it going to take us to get there? And that was the number one question. How long do we have to drive today? But we had to have a plan in action. Because if you get out, this is what I realized. We saw about 1/20th of what there was to see out there. And if we had just sort of said, well, we're going to drive and see what the next thing is, we would have not been back at all. Or if we said, hey, we'll try to find a hotel to get out there, there's a couple of times we would have been driving a long time looking for a place to stay. So we had to have this plan in place. And so you might be thinking, this is the part where the preacher tells us, yes, you need to work out your plan of discipleship. Like, you need to figure out how you're going to follow Jesus, and you need to get that whole thing worked out, your plan of discipleship, and you would be exactly wrong. Because here's the thing. You aren't the one who planned this out. You and me are more like my kids on the trip than the planners on the trip. You see, at just the right time, we're still powerless. Christ died for the ungodly. Very rarely will anyone die for a righteous person, a good person. Someone might possibly dare to die. But God demonstrates His own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. You didn't plan to meet God nearly so much as God planned to meet you. Let's just get that perfectly clear long before your thoughts turned to God. And no doubt at some point your thoughts did turn to God. But long before that ever happened, God was arranging for that to happen. Right? I want you to think back to the time when you sort of to this saving faith in Jesus Christ. Think about the time when you came into relationship with God through His Son, Jesus. And I want you to remember the circumstances that were taking place in your life that sort of prompted you in that direction. It could have been a great blessing. More likely, it was probably a little bit of a crisis. A great big crisis that sort of spurred you on in this direction. Maybe it was a guilty conscience. Maybe it was a failing relationship. Maybe it was financial woes. Maybe, who knows? But there were circumstances that sort of goaded you toward Jesus Christ. Think about the people who were in your life at the time you became a Christian. Think about the person or the people who said just the right thing. It could have been someone in one of our Lord's Supper devotionals. We have so many great men who do a job of sort of directing our thoughts in that. It could have been in a prayer at church. It more likely was in a personal conversation with someone that you knew. It could have been a parent or a grandparent or a close friend or just someone that you met. And that's the way this thing works, is that someone says something, and you, oh, wait a minute, that's me. Maybe I should be a Christian. You remember that, like, dawning? Maybe I should be a Christian. Maybe not like it's a good thing to be a Christian or Christianity is sort of out there, but all of a sudden it hits you that you need to be in relationship with the Father through the Son, that you need the blessing of the Spirit in your life. And so you didn't really think that all of that happened by accident, did you? Or worse yet, you don't think that all of that happened by your design. And that's really where my tendency is to go, is that I think back and I look sometimes and it's really tempting to look and think, oh man, what a good guy I am because I made all of the right choices. And I look at some of my friends that I went to school with, or some of the people that I worked with, or some of the people that I've known in my life, and didn't make those decisions. So I must have worked harder, or I must have been smarter, or I must have been more spiritual, or I must have been more godly, or more loved, or more lucky, or something. I think it's something that I did on my behalf. This tendency to think that, like, we had a great big part of our journey of faith. That's the temptation, is to think that somehow we're responsible for that. But the truth is far, far more humbling. Ephesians 2, verses 8 and 9, the Apostle Paul says, "For it is by grace," make no mistake about it, "it is by grace that you have been saved through faith. And this is not from yourselves. It is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast." You no more had a part in coming to faith than you did in buying your own Christmas presents when you were a toddler. You contributed zero towards the planning of this trip. For our trip, actually, I involved my kids a bit. I asked them about some of the things they might like to do, and I got their input. They never even saw the itinerary until we were well on the road. Somewhere in Colorado, about to head to Utah, I think, before they ever even saw what we were going to be doing. And you and I are a lot more like that than we are the father or the mother who planned this whole thing out. So in a way, we're just sort of passengers. In one sense, we're sort of like passengers. Every moment of this trip has been planned with you in mind. And so we can rest assured that God has carefully planned this journey out from beginning, from His first encounter, your first encounter with Him, the first time you realized you encountered Him, all the way to the very end. To the very last days of our life, God has carefully planned this journey. But once that's done, and the time for departure arrives, then comes perhaps what I think is the most difficult step in all of the journey. And that's starting. The morning of our departure, you can ask my wife, you can ask my kids, the morning of our departure felt crazy. First of all, our flight was at 6 a.m. So, out of Nashville. So we had to spend the night with my in-laws in Nashville, which is always light. No, they were super gracious. No, they really were. I mean, to take us in and all of our junk, I mean, it was just a mess. So yeah, we spent the night with them, and because our flight was at 6, we have to get to the airport 3 hours early? 2. Which means we were about 3:15 to get dressed and drive to the airport and get there, or to stand in line for 30 minutes and sit down for an hour and a half. I mean, it was a lot of fun. And so because of that, because, and you're standing in line with a bunch of other fun people, by the way. Because of that, and because it was so hectic, I didn't get a lot of pictures of that particular part of our. I only have one picture of us, and it's at the airport with our luggage. Here we are. I'm the one on the left behind my bags, and then Rebecca's on the right, and you can see the kids there in the middle. Seriously, my wife is annoyed about our luggage being lost, that everybody had to this carry-on bag plus a backpack, each one containing all of our toiletries and essentials, four changes of clothes, an emergency surgical kit, and enough MREs to last a week. I mean, we were loaded for bear, which I'm so glad that they didn't catch that as we were going through security. But anyway, starting out is difficult. We were worried about losing luggage, so all of luggage had to be, the handles were wrapped with rainbow-colored duct tape, because nobody else does that. And that's no joke, if you ever want a little tip there. As it's coming down through the baggage claim, yeah, that's me with the rainbow bride on there. That's me. So that was one of our little tips. Starting out is difficult. Why is starting out so difficult? And it's because we have to leave the comfort and relative ease of home. We have to leave routine and sort of head out on an adventure, right? We have to step out of our comfort zone. It is a call to leave the known and walk into the unknown. That's why starting out is so hard. It's not just that you have to pack your stuff, but you have to pack all the stuff that you might need. Because you know what? You don't know what you're going to need, right? So you consequently pack way too many clothes or way too many things, and you get back and you're like, I didn't use half. Of course not. Because you didn't know what you needed. You know, if I'd known we were going to wash clothes every 3 or 4 days, I'd have brought 2 pairs of shorts, a pair of underwear, and we'd have been fine. Maybe. Right? But I had like 2 or 3 t-shirts and a couple pairs of shorts I never wore. You just never know. So you think about, I want you to think about some of the times that you've stepped out of the known, gone into the unknown, maybe leaving the relative safety of Manchester, Tennessee to go work in a poor village in a third world country. Maybe it's leaving home to go spend time with the homeless. Maybe it's leaving your family to go live life with a bunch of strangers by comparison. All of those are real steps taken by people as they become Christians. I'm reminded of this passage, one of the most defining and important scripture undertaken by a great man of faith, Abraham. And David actually quoted it last week. I'm going to quote it again this week from Hebrews 11:8. It says, by faith, Abraham, when called to go to a place he would later receive as his inheritance, obeyed and went, even though he didn't know where he was going. Now, why is that so important? Because it typifies, the reason it's quoted here in Hebrews, or used as an example here in Hebrews, is because in a sense, every one of guys had to do that. Every one of them had to leave what they knew to go and step into what they didn't know. Every person who has ever been a follower of God, who has ever been a follower of Jesus Christ, has had to make that step. If you haven't made that step, I've got it for you, you're not following Jesus. You're following your own made-up God. Unless you have stepped out in faith from the known into the unknown, you're not really following Christ. Remember that first leap of faith that you took? The time that you stepped out trusting God would catch you, even though you had no idea how He was going to do that. I have to tell you, from the outside looking in, let's just kind of be analytical here for a second. Following Jesus looked absolutely crazy. Think about this. You're talking to an invisible being in prayer before you eat or bed and throughout your day. You're spending time learning and committing to memory and meditating on and living your life by a book that was compiled about 2,000 years ago. Not current. You're choosing voluntarily to give up some of the most precious time in your entire, your free time on the weekends. You're choosing to do that with a bunch of other crazy people. You're eating crackers and drinking grape juice to remember the death, burial, and resurrection of a man that you've never met in person. You are giving up the pleasures of the world that for many people is like the highlight of their life. It's the best thing they ever experienced. You're choosing to give that up voluntarily and saying you like it. Following Jesus from the outside looking in makes zero sense. Until you actually do it. And then something sort of clicks. Maybe a small click at first. Maybe a big click. But something falls into place. But in order for that to happen, you still have to take that first step. That most difficult step. Some of you this morning may not have made that decision just yet. You've been willing to step out in faith into the unknown. My prayer for you this morning is that you take a few moments to look at people who are seated around you, whether you know them well or don't know them well. Some of them look like they have it all together, like the perfect home, perfect family, the perfect faith, like they have got it all together. But let me assure you on their behalf, that they do not. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn when saying that none of the people here who follow Jesus have got this thing all together. We don't. And if you think that you've got it all together, then me and you need to switch places. Because no, I don't. And I could try to speak every thought and reassure you that yes, we don't have it all together, but it's going to be easy. Because it's not going to be. Sometimes following Jesus is really, really hard. Forgiving people who have wronged you woefully, as we talked about this morning in the divorce care class, that's hard. Someone who has done and used to do terrible things against you, that's not the easy step. Sometimes you will question your own abilities or your faith or your commitment or even your sanity. Every one of us has done that. But while I cannot make assurances that aren't mine to make, that aren't true, I can make you this assurance. And that is that the Jesus that we follow is very real, is very true, and He is very present. That the Jesus we follow is not just a man who lived 2,000 ago, neither is He just a figment of our imaginations. And the life that He offers on this journey of faith is not one that we would trade for all of those pleasures that we've given up in our lives. So if you've not been a Christian this morning, I want you to think about that, but perhaps you're a Christian looking at their life this morning or has been looking at their life and realize that you haven't actually been living the same sort of faith that you pledged yourself to however long ago when you made this commitment. That maybe you stepped out in good faith, realized it, and then after you kind of got like Peter and walked away from the boat a little ways, those waves start looking a little bigger and you're like, no, I'd rather go back to the known, back to the safe. And so you've sort of retreated back to your old life. And boy, what a temptation that is. And if that's what you've done this morning, we understand. We completely sympathize with what you've done. But at the same time, you can't do that. It's time to step back out. God will be there to forgive you every bit as surely as He was the time. And He's ready and willing to do that. And we are too. If you need any help this morning, if we can encourage you, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?